with Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 555. Oh my goodness gracious. I just love that. Of the Bold and Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by someone so ridiculously unique. You are going to love this. When was the last time you hung out with someone who is a pharmacologist, but let alone someone who's also a menopause pharmacologist? How crazy is that? Is it a thing? Well, apparently so, because she's here. Who is this beautiful woman? All right. So we have with us Dr. Holly Wakelin. Now, Holly's an accomplished pharmacist with more than two decades of experience spanning clinical practice, public service, emergency response, and patient education. And look, she came in from the United States Navy. Hello. There you go. All right. And retiring at the rank of captain. Hello. She served on the front lines of major public health crises, including the Ebola crisis, COVID in New York City, and on and on. Oh, my goodness gracious. And she was inspired. Well, I want you to tell me who you were inspired by and how all of this became a thing for you. Like, you could have gone in 38 different directions.
Yeah.
Right? But you chose this direction. So first of all, Holly, welcome on board to the Her podcast, for crying out loud.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. And number 555, I think that might be fortuitous.
Hey, better it was not 666, you know. Yes. Then we're kind of like, yeah, we're probably going to skip over that one when we hit it.
But, although it is Friday the 13th, right?
Yeah, so. You know, it's weird. It's been 2 months with Friday the 13th. That's weird. Okay. Do. All right. Now that we've run down that rabbit hole for a minute. So what a fantastic background. Tell everyone your academic background so they understand who you are.
Okay, sure. Well, and thank you for the invitation. And I'm very happy to be here. And I love talking to people about their health and seeing what I can do to help them. So my background is I'm a doctor of pharmacy. I am board certified in ambulatory care pharmacy. And I'm also a Menopause Society certified practitioner. So that's my academic work. I've done 25 plus years in a variety of health settings, as you mentioned there, retired from the U.S. Navy and the United States Public Health Service. I really have a genuine passion for public health and helping people to live their best lives.
And you noticed my master's in public health. You know,
I did
that before medical school. I was one of the very first physicians to do that. This is back at Berkeley. I was doing my undergrad, and then I just went directly into grad school before med school, before it became really cool to get an MPH. I loved to be able to look at epidemiology and to get a more, as it were, global look at what was going on with public health per se before I went to med school. And I'm so grateful I did that. It's like insane.
That must have been fascinating, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
A number of years ago.
Well, it's a thing now. It's like everyone's like, oh my God, I have like 900 degrees after my name and I have an alphabet soup and whatever. I hope it's all working for you. So here's the deal. I stumbled on you when I saw you being interviewed by one of my colleagues, Dr. Jen Gunter. I was absolutely transfixed. I said, what is a menopause pharmacist? What is that?
I thought,
how cool is this? How many questions you can answer and all of this. I was just soaking it up. Could not get enough. And then I went ahead and subscribed to your Substack, which you're going to tell us about too, which is just so ridiculously informative. So every time that comes across, I'm like grabbing it real quickly and seeing what you had to say today. I just find you to be very approachable. The way you teach is very understandable because most people think, like pharmacology, like, this is going to be hard to stomach and whatever. So here you are, you have this great 25-year history and everything. Why did you decide to pivot to become, from what I can gather, the first menopause pharmacist?
Yeah, I've gathered that as well. I appreciate all of the kind words, because in this world where we're separated, you're just putting stuff off into the internet. You're writing a Substack article. You're randomly DMing, you know, like, I don't know what's happening out there, like how I'm being perceived, because I am quite new at this. And I don't know who else does this. So what I do is I focus on education. So I want to make sure that women and clinicians and people who identify women, but like the midlife transition here of hormone health and medications and just kind of being able to access legitimate evidence-based information. There's a lot of influencers out there. There's a lot of people selling you things. And
what, you got a problem with TikTok?
Yeah. No, I love it for the dog videos. I love the dog videos. I think that people are so creative.
My German Shepherd agrees. Usually watches them right along with me.
German Shepherd. I've got a little tiny poodle and she thinks she's a German Shepherd.
They could get along.
We can
make this work. But to your point, there's so much misinformation. There's so much craziness going on out there by influencers who are just shooting from the hip. And this is very important, because we're not talking about coloring your hair. We're talking about your health.
That's right.
As a woman coursing through perimenopause, menopause, and beyond. And this is where credible evidence-based information is absolutely critical. So I love to gift my her podcast audience out there with really excellent resources. And we'll be getting into where you can find more information about what you do as well. But I just find your background, your work currently, to be absolutely compelling. So that's cool. But why menopause?
Why menopause? I know. Well, I think there's so many reasons. But first and foremost, it's that every time I opened my feed, I would see some sort of influencer, some sort of supplement, some sort of injection, some sort of content that felt, it had a feeling of money and like, okay, people who have money, people who have access to resources, people who have get better health. And I just don't want that to be the case. And I kept just kind of digging in a little bit more about what information is out there. And I found that there was less evidence-based information out there than I would like. And I thought, well, I could at least put my voice into this. Pharmacy is such a big area. I do pharmacology, right? I am a doctor of pharmacy. I do clinical work with my menopause business, but I'm also like a regular pharmacist. I work per diem at a regular pharmacy. I give people antibiotics. I help give people advice on how to take care of their Parkinson's parents. I'm helping teenagers with their periods. I have a regular job that I really enjoy helping all kinds of folks. And the menopause world kind of started for me when I was deployed to COVID-19, the first field hospital, like right around this time, actually, March of 2020. That's crazy. Six years. And so it was one of the
March
first
of 2020. That's when everything shut down.
Yeah.
Nice timing.
And I was getting on an airplane to go to New York from Seattle area and build a 3,000 bed field hospital with, you know, a bunch of colleagues while New York was shut down. And I started having hot flashes and I was like, what is happening? I was only 43 only. And I just didn't have time to look into it or to pay attention to it. I'm around all these high ranking folks and I'm trying to work on this pandemic. So then I just kind of started down that rabbit hole of learning information and what I was taught. I graduated with my PharmD in 2002, which is a year that we all know in the menopause world as when the WHI was released. And so the last 20 years, I have been taught the same as all, I think, the rest of my traditional medicine colleagues and trying to follow along with the latest evidence. So that's how I ended up here, is kind of a personal nature, but also a public health perspective that I want to get good information out there. I do believe women have choices. I want them to have choices. They can do whatever they like, but I don't think that the voice of evidence-based medicine is out there enough for women to be able to make their best choices.
Okay, so you decided to jump into the deep end on this one. And how has it been for you? Are people just welcoming this and saying, like, where have you been all my life and what's been going on? Because I've been reading some of the Substack comments and whatever. I mean, we're very, very excited to have you around and to answer so many different questions that we have, because I'm going to pose you some of those little questions very shortly.
Little questions?
Yeah, I know. Questions? What questions? So I just, first of all, am so grateful you're around so that we can toss all of our crazy questions your way. For instance, just for grins, I did this. This could be a really cool blog for you too. I just decided to have a little look at what I call all the drugs that show up as options for a woman coursing through perimenopause, menopause, and beyond. And it's not pretty. There's, oh my goodness gracious. So
there's a lot.
Oh my goodness gracious. We have hormonal therapies, obviously. And one of the hottest topics, and we'll get to that in 2 seconds, is this whole issue of the black box warning coming off HRT, the hormonal replacement therapy. And so now all of a sudden, estrogen's a thing, right? As well as obviously progestin, depending upon if you still have your uterus and all the rest of it. But so we've got hormonal therapy, we've got non-hormonal therapy, and these are a lot of the SSRIs, and now we've got these new drugs coming out to be able to work with the brain, and these are the NK3 receptor antagonists that have just hit the market. You know that Astellas, as well as Bayer, both have two different iterations of these. And who knows what's going to happen with any of this. I know that women, between you and me, don't want to pop pills. They would rather do things, and I quote, as naturally as possible, which brings us to the wonderful world of the hell of OTCs. It's like, oh, look, it's an herbal that promises me that all my hot flashes will disappear overnight. Yeah. All right, so we're going to get to that.
Great.
And then we've got the antidepressants. We've got ways to sleep or not sleep. So anxiety pops up here. Stress. And so women oftentimes are just like trolling the aisles of pharmacies, just looking for something, anything that will speak to them one way or the other.
And midwife has all kinds of other diagnoses, as you know, like they might have diabetes, they might have heart health issues.
Or musculoskeletal
issues. Yeah, right? Musculoskeletal issues.
And then they're also on the weight drugs.
Yes.
So because women tend to really pack it on during this period of time as well. So we're talking about the GLPs, well, and whatever's coming down the pipeline, because I know that there's at least three more classes of drugs that are going to be showing up fairly shortly. So here we have a woman like yourself. Let's just go to you for a second.
Okay.
So what if a woman was around 45? She's coursing through her perimenopause and she's starting to feel symptomatology that's associated with this very natural transition called perimenopause. But she's starting to have disrupted sleep, maybe some temperature dysregulations, nice way of saying hot flashes. Maybe she's also feeling anxiety. As it turns out, anxiety is a thing in the perimenopause because of the changes in stress hormone that correspond with a lot of the symptomatology that's happening with perimenopause. She's also feeling like, everything aches, musculoskeletal. Things are changing there too. Appetite is changing. So where does she begin? How does a woman, what's the path for a woman to take to be able to cut through the craziness out there and begin to understand what might work for her at a highly credible level?
Yeah, great. I think that is a very apropos presentation of a patient. And it is complex. I think all of the things that you just said, evidence how complex this is and how individualized this is too. It is not just every single 45-year-old woman has X, Y, and Z. So what we have to do is find a provider that is going to listen to you, first of all, right? You want to make sure that you have a good relationship with your clinician. And I would start with a primary care provider, hopefully. I understand there's a lot of issues in the health insurance world and the medicine world and the traditional medicine world, but what we would like to do is have you see a primary care clinician that maybe specializes in women's health, that has a background in menopause. Maybe you have an MSCCP, a menopause
That would
society.
Include a gynecologist who's now diverted over. Tell us what this certification is that you have, that is the menopause certified provider, because it's a new thing.
Yes, the Menopause Society Certified Practitioner, MSCP, is a designation given by the Menopause Society. It used to be known as the North American Menopause Society. You might see that, NAMS. And I encourage everyone to Google NAMS or the position statements of what the Menopause Society recommends and not recommends based on evidence. These are evidence-based guidelines. And so there are some criteria in order to be able to sit for the exam. There is an exam that is offered a couple times a year. There's criteria to meet for that. There's a review, and then there's the exam. And then you become an MSCP. That's your credential. And what that does, you know, there's MSCP people who are also pharmacists like me, right? So most of the time it'll be nurse practitioners or physicians, but there are registered dietitians. There are alternative providers that offer the MSCP. And what that gives you is a little bit extra knowledge about your provider. It's like, okay, this person has studied at least somewhat of the menopause world, and that should make you feel better. There's a list of us on the Menopause Society website.
Oh, really? So there's a full listing. And so based upon your geographic locale, you could find someone.
Yes,
right?
You can. And that takes me back to the initial person, your 45-year-old presentation of a person that we would like to see get evaluated for a lot of things. So a lot of those symptoms that you described could be perimenopause, but it could also be other things too. And we want to make sure that you are looked at from a whole perspective, make sure that there are other diagnoses that can be evaluated, and then talk to you about things like lifestyle and nutrition and exercise, and just kind of give a good overall review of the woman herself and not just say, oh, you're in perimenopause. Here's something. See you next
well,
year.
Well, I'm going to stop you for a second. Number one, perimenopause didn't even exist as a word 10 years ago. Like people,
it is a new
basically,
term
this is what happened, ladies, right? You hit 40 and you fall off a cliff. You disappear. Then you reemerge when you have menopause. So that's 12 years later. And then you go, what the hell just happened? And your whole body changed. Your brain is going into a foggy land. And it's just all kind of crazy. Well, now we obviously have, thank heavens, dedicated enough science and research dollars to be able to figure out, I don't know, it's a thing. While you're weaning off your main sex hormones, and we're looking at estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, what you're finding is that that weaning process takes no less than 10 years. And you'll discover how those sex hormones affect almost every tissue in a woman's body. And so when it's no surprise, you're not going out of your mind. Most women thought they were, by the way. In the old days, women going in their 40s were like, I'm going out of my mind. No, you're going through perimenopause and all of those subsequent issues. So perimenopause wasn't even a thing, right? And I'm also going to tell you, thank heavens for people who are menopause certified practitioners. Why? Because the old school way to do this was to meet with a woman for 10 minutes and go, yeah, you know, you're okay. Well, just sort of here, just take this little sheet of paper that I give to everyone, and I'm not going to individualize anything. And I'm just going to say, just follow some of these general rules and whatever. See you in a year. And that was basically how long it took. It was no customization, no listening to someone. This is something you do, Holly, right?
So what I do is I help to educate the people who do that. And I do talk to women as well. And of course, I dispense all of these medications and we have conversations about it. But my goal is to educate everyone, I guess. And I think that when I hear you talk, you know, so fascinating, your background and that you've been in medicine for a long time and have seen the ups and downs and the changes of how we have treated women. And it's really important that we validate the experience of these women and not just hand them something and say, we'll see you next year, right? Like you were kind of intimating there. I still see it now as eat less, move more, it's natural, you'll be fine. Or there's just a lot of invalidation that I see. And I think it's very important that we recognize what these women are going through. And not everybody, there are a lot of women that don't experience things that they at least outwardly, inwardly, we know there's things happening, but it's important that we validate every woman's experience.
Yeah. And if you don't individualize, customize, and take enough time to sit down with that woman, shame on you. Come on now. The other thing to keep in mind is the old-fashioned way of doing this was everyone gets the same thing. We get that. But what we've now discovered through research over the last 20 years is that this is an exquisitely dynamic time in a woman's life. What's working now may not be working so great in 6 months.
Yeah.
And not in 6 years. I'm talking 6 months, which is why you need to find a provider who's really going to be there for you. And so I highly recommend you go to the Menopause Society's website and find a menopause certified provider near you. And you're going to find that they're gynecologist, internal medicine, family practice, endocrinologists, all kinds of interesting people now are dipping their little toes into the waters of menopause certified practitioner because they know that there's such a need out there. They know that there's a huge need. So what are the main drugs, Dr. Holly, that you see women are really struggling with as they go through this? Do they need drugs for sleep, for anxiety? How do you, as a pharmacologist, approach this whole issue when a woman walks in, as it were, on your Substack or wherever else, and they have a laundry list of issues, wondering whether or not it's the retail pharmacist that's going to help them here, or whether or not they need to be having a little conversation about how they're living their life?
Yeah. Well, I think it could be both. I mean, maybe not the retail pharmacist. That is a rough space right now. They don't have, unfortunately, a lot of time to be able to address individual issues, but you need to be able to keep track of how you're feeling. And it's such a comprehensive look for women. We need to make sure that your lifestyle management techniques are there. And that is not something that I specialize in, but there's a lot of exercise and diet. I know that you speak on this all the time on your podcast. So this is a good source of information for that. And then sometimes there will be medications that are necessary. And I think that is not a failure. It is just the way it is. And I see a lot on social media, I'm kind of combating some of the negative energy out there about like SSRI. So using serotonin receptor reuptake inhibitors, the like Paxil or Prozac or Zoloft or number ones, there's SNRIs too that affect norepinephrine. There's mental health drugs that can be necessary. And I think that is fine. Don't feel shamed by people on the internet that say, oh, you don't need to take this or you shouldn't take this. And sometimes you need hormones, sometimes you don't, right? It's such an individual approach.
You know, that individual approach is where it's at. So when we come back, I want you to kind of describe now what's happening with something we now call menopause hormonal therapy, not HRT anymore. So last year, instead, we want to say menopausal hormonal therapy. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative, holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right. Now, what is with this? So for a long time, it was all HRT, hormonal replacement therapy. And in the old days, it was like, well, what we want to do is bring this young woman up to snuff with younger hormonal levels and whatever the heck that's supposed to mean, and to be able to help her with some of these symptoms, etc. And some of this stuff was a little rough. It was like high dose stuff. Some of it was so high dose and so intense, you can wash the floor with it. So I thought, we better back off, just like we did with birth control pills, and come up with something that's a little more individualized. So lo and behold, the birth of menopause hormonal therapy, right? So now we have this. And women now have read all about this estrogen thing. Some of the providers were freaking out, saying, no, you can't take estrogen because of what happened with the Women's Health Initiative back in the year 2000. Only to find out, of course, it turns out it's perfectly fine under appropriate circumstances. You don't have breast cancer, hormonal cancers, and serious cardiovascular disease. But now women are saying, well, what about me? Right now, like, oh, what if I was at 45-year-old having hot flashes and whatever else? Is she supposed to now start considering something like MHT?
I think it's important to consider all your options, and you have to have that individualized discussion with your clinician to determine your breast cancer risk, to determine your cardiovascular risk, to determine your cardiometabolic risk, your diabetes factors, your analysis of how you are in a health perspective. We need to understand what your main symptoms are. What are you struggling with? What can we help you with? And that will determine how we treat you. What are your main concerns? And what do we have in that is menopause society driven or professional society driven guidelines? So we have ACOG, you have the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. We've got AAFP, we've got the AANP, the nurse practitioners, we have urological society, we have endocrinology societies, we have societies of professional experts that have evaluated treatments for you. And so that is what evidence-based means, is trying to find out what symptoms you have and what are the treatment options available and what are your personal risks and benefits. And
so it's cool to say that a woman in her perimenopause could actually begin, say, for instance, estrogen.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that is definitely someone who presents with disruptive sleep with night sweats, for example, or hot flashes at night, kind of it's a vasomotor symptoms, then estradiol is a first line therapy. We still have to evaluate your risks and your benefits, and we have to discuss with your personal history. But yes, that is definitely a conversation.
What's the best way to give estradiol?
Right now, transdermal is the way we start typically.
You're talking about the patch.
Yeah, there's also gels. There's a vaginal ring that allows systemic use that is similar to a transdermal type of application. There's a spray that you put on your arm. There's options. That transdermal means it goes through the skin. So the drug that you give is formulated specifically to go through your skin and to enter your bloodstream. Oral estradiol still is a great option too for a lot of women. I think it kind of gets a bad rap on the socials, but
because they say, well, it's unnatural and it's broken down in the liver, and then you're not really quite sure what you're getting. So, Dr. Holly, explain.
Well, if you were going to talk about the natural argument, estradiol tablets is the same as estradiol transdermal patches or estradiol gel. It's the same. Estradiol is the same. And so estradiol tablets that are taken by mouth go through the liver and have a first pass effect. Now, some of that may be beneficial for levels like cholesterol levels, for example, but then it could also potentially increase the risk of clotting. And that is a very low risk with oral estradiol. And those are things that we evaluate with each person, what their personal clotting risk is. But a lot of times people think of oral estradiols as Premarin, right? The horse urine Premarin, right? And that's what we studied in the Women's Health Initiative. We have a lot of data on that. And we used to give it all the time. I'm curious about, do you remember prescribing PremPro and Premarin back in the 90s?
Like there's no tomorrow. You know?
I remember having stacks of it. I was an intern in New York City, and I remember having stacks of it in their little circle where you pop out the pills. And
exactly.
We still have it.
You know, the nice thing about the patch is that it's twice a week.
Or it could be once a week. There are once weekly
patches. Or even once. Too. You're absolutely correct. So it's a no-brainer versus popping a pill.
Yeah, some people don't like the adhesive around it. They don't like that ring that goes around it. Some people, it falls off if they swim a lot or they're hot tub or sauna users. Some people find it less discreet. You can see the patch, and a lot of people don't like that. So, but if you want, you know, there's transdermal gels that you apply once a day that you rub in, and nobody sees that. There's no adhesive to worry about. The fem ring is a vaginal ring that you insert yourself, and it stays for 3 months, and you don't have to worry about it for 3 months, and then you take it out.
Is that vaginal ring, I call it the E-ring, the estrogen ring, right? Does it really deliver systemically?
Yes, there are two of them. So you're thinking there's two options. There's the S-ring, which is a local vaginal ring. It's something that and we use that for genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And then there's the fem ring that does deliver systemic levels of estradiol. It's the concentration in the ring itself.
Fantastic. So in other words, ladies, we have options.
Yes, you do.
And depending upon when you need any of this, you have to, as Dr. Holly said, you have to be your own best advocate. You need to keep a record of any of your symptoms and when did it start, how bad is it, whatever, so that when you're actually having a conversation with a menopause-certified practitioner, then you can really sound like you're knowledgeable about your own body here. But I think it's very, very cool that women now have the option of doing the menopause hormonal therapy earlier. And then here's the other question. What if a woman went through menopause, she transitioned and ended her menstrual cycles by the age of 52, which is sort of on average, okay? And now she is 68. Is she still a candidate for menopausal hormonal therapy? Because now she's saying to herself, well, wait a minute now. I know that estrogen is a bone builder and it's really good. And I was looking at my DEXA scan and it's looking a little plus minus here. And I need all the help I can get. Is it too late for me to initiate estrogen? And I'm going to tell you, she has no cancer history. She has no cardiovascular history of report. She's just wondering. She's taking very good care of herself otherwise.
Yeah, I do feel for that age group with the data that we have not been paying attention to in the last 20 years. And so what do we do now with that person? Well, they deserve a conversation for sure. They deserve to go to their clinician and say, these are my concerns. This is my personal medical history. And what are the risks and the benefits? We do know that we want to start menopausal hormone therapy within 10 years of your last menstrual period or within your menopause for the most benefit versus risk. But that doesn't mean if you start after 10 years that you can't or that you shouldn't. It's just another benefit risk analysis. I want to kind of go back to that perimenopause person too, real quick, when we're talking about the menopausal hormone therapy, because I think it's important that perimenopausal women remember that that is a possibility they could get pregnant. If you are perimenopause and have sperm in your life, then it is possible that you can get pregnant. And menopausal hormone therapy is not a birth control. And so we can use birth control pills, oral contraceptive pills, in the perimenopause phase for a lot of reasons. We use it for PCOS. We use it for all kinds of things that we want to help the woman with. But importantly, the birth control allows pregnancy prevention. There are other methods. We could do an IUD, for example, and then you could do estradiol, a patch if that's what you prefer. But we do have to remember in the perimenopausal world that pregnancy is still something to think
about. So the birth control pills will also help with the symptoms of perimenopause.
It is possible it can. Yes, we have to look at the amount of estradiol that's in it. We have to look at the progestin that's in it, the type of progestin. We can modify that for your particular symptoms. So let's say you're someone who struggles with acne, then we might look at a progestin that has less androgenic effects, like a drospirenone or something. There are a lot of options. And then again, it is individualized depending on the woman and what her concerns are.
Absolutely. No question. And there are a lot of women who also go into premature menopause for a number of reasons.
Yes.
Everything from surgical removal of the ovaries for whatever reason to chemotherapy, say, for instance, which will also oftentimes be quite, you know, disruptive.
And we have different guidelines for those women. For women who go under in menopause earlier than age 40, we have different guidelines for that. And it is menopausal hormone therapy, but it is hormone replacement therapy for women who are under age 40, because we know that their risks are much higher going through it earlier than 40.
And another reason why you want to have someone who truly is educated about this and can customize for you, because women like that who have what we call premature menopause for whatever reason are a challenge. You need to be able to stay on top of it because it can be fairly devastating at multiple levels, everything from cognitive performance to what happens to their bone mineral density once the estrogen is no longer available. So you want to replace that as soon as possible. What about sleep? Now, come on now, let's go to sleep. Women are like, oh, I can't get any sleep,
you know,
whether it's just being awakened by hot flashes, whether it's just anxiety, stress, just all of the stuff that's going on in a woman's body that's sort of pro-inflammatory that's affecting her. So what do you, as a pharmacologist, Dr. Holly, recommend a woman first do when she's dealing with her sleep issues and challenges?
And that is a very common presentation too in that perimenopause phase. So there needs to be conversation about like why? Why do you think this is happening? It could be related to hormones for sure, but it could be related to other things as well. And so we need to do a differential diagnosis of things like sleep apnea. Or are you waking up often? Are you having trouble getting to sleep? Are you getting up 3 or 4 times a night to go to the bathroom? Are you having genitourinary syndrome of menopause, for example? That would lead us down a treatment path of vaginal estrogen, or a treatment path that may be different than the sleep apnea path, where we would want to do a lab study potentially. We would want to evaluate, do you have restless leg syndrome? Do you have a snoring partner next to you? There's all kinds of different sleep hygiene things that can be done. There's good guidance for CBTI. I'm not sure if you've heard of that, cognitive behavioral therapy, insomnia. So there's specialists that do that. This is way outside my scope, but I'm just mentioning that there are different types of options rather than medications, but there are medications as well.
What about OTCs, supplements for that?
Yeah, so supplements are difficult because we don't have FDA-approved supplements. We have products that are available over-the-counter that have very little quality data. And we're also unsure about what is actually in the product, right? So it says it has melatonin 5 milligrams, but does it? There was a recent study that showed that it doesn't either have less than it or much higher amounts than it is, plus other additives that you don't know about. So supplements, unfortunately, are just not as regulated as we would like them to be in the medicine world. I recommend people look at things like third-party certifications. So something like a USP, there's a symbol, United States Pharmacopeia, or NSF. that show at least what it says on the label is in the product. Whether it works or not, well, that's a different story. But at least you know that you are taking what it says in the label.
I'm a big fan of magnesium glycinate at nighttime. It's so interesting. I've studied this. I'm a Pew Foundation scholar in nutrition, so I kind of watch that whole world really closely. But I've looked at some fantastic data, published evidence-based on magnesium, and I have found it to be insanely helpful for being able to go to sleep well at nighttime. And I tend to recommend that. I'm very careful about what I recommend in a big way, so that there's some important ways to be pathways. I look at Consumer Labs and a number of other groups that basically vet a lot of these kinds of products, because you're right. It's like all they claim, but they don't. It's like on the edge. And so you have to be a little bit careful there.
Especially in your world of, I know you have a strong background in athletics and exercise, and with your background there, with products that people are taking and the things that are allowed and not allowed in sports competitions, for example, I know a lot of athletes have been surprised that the products they took had things in it that they were either not disclosed or didn't understand. So I think that's an important part for some of your viewers too, is to think about what's actually in the product.
I think it's also helpful to have teas. I love tea.
And, interesting. I don't know a lot about tea, honestly.
Okay, well, tell me.
No, I don't. That's what I mean.
No, I'm playing with you. It's like, okay, no, tea. You should definitely check out the tea situation. Obviously, in the best of all worlds, at nighttime, it's an herbal because it has no caffeine. Some of the other caffeinated teas don't have that much in them. You just have to read the label and understand how much caffeine's in them. But they
can
perk you up.
There's so many types of tea. There's so many. It's overwhelming.
It's just wonderful, though, when you get a chance to kind of play with them. I like the herbals like jasmine to die for. It's just nice stuff. You have to kind of just discover it for yourself. Do a lot of reading. Hello, reading, educating, self-educating, because you are your own best advocate. But the teas are absolutely fabulous. There's another thing that always troubles me. Why are so many women in perimenopause, menopause on antidepressants? What are we trying to treat there, Dr. Holly?
Well, we're hopefully treating mental health. There are some antidepressants, SSRIs. There are like low-dose paroxetine that is FDA indicated for hot flashes. So some of those products are actually being used for hot flashes. But yes, there are a lot of folks that use SSRIs. And there's some negative talk, I think, on social media about being prescribed that instead of a hormone replacement therapy or menopausal hormone therapy, depending on where you are in your cycle here. But I think it's important to validate that people who are on SSRIs and find them useful, that it's okay. If you're on an SSRI and you felt like you were just given that by your clinician who had 6 minutes and didn't discuss other things with you, I think that's something that you might want to review with a different clinician. We don't want women to feel dismissed, but we also want to make them feel validated. Mental health is important, and sometimes you do need mental health drugs.
I think that that's exceptionally important, what you just said, and that is there should be no stigma. And that's why I brought this whole thing up, because I think that when you think about all the elements in a woman's life that are colliding in her 40s and early 50s, everything from changes in relationships, where you live, your career, all the people that you're caregiving, it just goes on. And then you get to your body. It's like, wait a minute now. And especially at the time of menopause, when you stop having menstrual cycles, those sex hormones are plummeting. Okay. And this is where bone mineral density decreases substantially. If you're not already on some form of menopausal hormonal therapy, which can mitigate some of this, but it's going to fall anyway, but you just don't want it to like really fall off a cliff on this, because a lot of women run into major problems in a big way.
Bone health is so important.
I think it's important to realize that there are so many different elements. I think I'm one of the overriding themes from this whole wonderful conversation with you, Dr. Holly, is that a woman is very complex. her journey through perimenopause, menopause, and beyond is nuanced with being very dynamic. So this is why you've got to have someone there to guide you. It's like a marathon. You got that coach. You can get through that first 5 miles. What's going to happen in the next 10? Like, how's that working?
And then the other 10, and then the other three. Like, it's
exactly. And the issue is, do you have the A team around you? And this is why I'm so excited about not only the fact that you're a pharmacologist, right? Knowledgeable about all these options for a woman as she courses through this part of her hormonal journey, but also that you went to the trouble of becoming a menopause certified practitioner so that you understand what's happening through each of these phases. We never knew that, Holly. We never knew it. Basically, most physicians for decades were just making this stuff up as they went along. And then out of the blue, we started, obviously, thank you heavens, you know, funding more and more and more research on women. And we stopped trying to transfer over and infer from male research. That turns out to be deadly. You can't do that, especially when it comes to drugs. The SSRIs in particular in men, they don't do well with that. Women, they're actually much more effective. Who knew, right? So it's important that everyone out there know that we're now honoring the fact that every one of you have to be assertive. You've got to find that practitioner. Don't roll your eyes at me and go, oh my God, it's like so much work. Really, if you want to find a new hair salon, what do? You rip apart the entire city. You know you do that. Don't give me that. So this is 50 times more important. This is a practitioner who's going to help guide you over the course of years. And you want to be able to be tight with that person so that they honor and respect who you are right now and your unique needs. And this is why I rant and rave about this, because this is not the way it was for years.
Nope. I love your advocacy and I love your experience of, like, you have been doing this for decades. You know what it's been like.
Very frustrating.
You've seen that.
You know,
when we didn't
have so many of these new tools and we didn't know about menopausal hormonal therapy, all of this, really, you can do lower doses of everything? Gee, no kidding, Sherlock. So now we have all of that and there's no excuse for a woman not to be able to benefit from that. And so anyway, now tell everyone how they can access all of your wonderful work so that they can sign up right now. All right, let's do it.
Well, I'm quite new at this, but I'm always validated by conversations with you and with other experts that kind of say, well, what you're doing is good, so keep doing it. So I will. I am new on Substack, but I feel like that's a good place for me. The Menopause Pharmacist RX is where you can find me on Substack.
So the Menopause Pharmacist RX.
Yep. And you can look by my name too, which is on the screen there. I do threads. I do Instagram. I do a little TikTok, but my website is menopausepharmacist.org. And that gives you access to courses that I teach mostly for clinicians on how to prescribe menopausal hormone therapy, how to prescribe FDA-approved testosterone. I give some guidance for estradiol patch, transdermal patches, which are a little bit difficult to find right now, the shortages. What are your options? That's probably a good place to start, is menopausepharmacist.org.
So it's the menopausepharmacist.org. Do you work with individual people who want to grab a consultation from you?
I do. Yeah. I don't do telehealth, but I do education. So it is, and I can do that with one-on-one women. I definitely do that.
So if you have questions out there, and let's say you either have a question about, should I start this particular thing? Now, you're not practicing medicine, obviously. What you're doing is you're just providing education. I always love going to the pharmacist and saying, is this going to conflict with that?
Yeah.
You know, if I take this, is that going to mess up with that? And by the way, ladies, hello. When you sit down with your menopause certified provider, you should come in with a little laundry list of all the stuff you're taking, all of it. Okay. And that means everything from if you have, for instance, a vitamin, like a multivitamin that you take on a daily basis. If you've always been a little low on vitamin D and now you're trying to chase your levels and make sure they're normal again and whatever, all that stuff is highly informative. And also, it's important because you don't want to clash with medications. Very important, right? Isn't that?
Yes.
I mean, you're the expert, Dr. Holly.
And we can help you with some of that stuff too. Like if you're getting iron, if you have low iron levels and you've been prescribed ferrous sulfate or iron, actually using vitamin C at the same time helps to absorb that iron. Now that doesn't have to be in a tablet. It could be with an orange juice if you're not diabetic or, you know, there's some of the complications there. But pharmacists know how all the drugs interact.
Yeah, I know. And you definitely do. So again, what I want everyone out there to do is run over to menopausepharmacist.org. If you're on Substack, it's the Menopause Pharmacist, right? RX.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And you'll be able to find Dr. Holly Wakelin, and that's WAKELYN. And you can start really getting your education right now because her materials are absolutely positively wonderful. Everyone, we have literally had a great dose. You like that little drug joke? We've had a dose of the menopause pharmacist. I love this. And this is so unique. I've never had anyone who is a menopause pharmacist on before. So you will definitely be returning on a routine basis, guaranteed, especially as new developments pop up and back and forth. We've talked a lot in other podcasts about the GLPs, but there's going to be a lot more nuances with that. So we'll be circling back with you to get further education so we can all be a little smarty pants people and on the overall. I just want to say, Holly, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast.
Oh, thank you. This has been a joy. I've really enjoyed meeting you and learning about your experiences and your background too. Thank you.
Well, this is good. We make a good team. It takes a team, as we say. All right. So thank you to Dr. Holly Wakelin. And I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray. And these are wonderful vitamins, minerals, and herbs and the new Her Life Stages products. So run on over to solaray.com and take a moment now to leave us a review because we love to hear from you. This has been a production of Podcast Health. And I just want you to keep in mind that even though your time in this world may be limited, what you can do with that time is not. So this is a good time to kind of run on over to Menopause Pharmacists and get smart. Okay, now get on out there and seize the day. Every one of you, thanks for listening.
Thank you.